WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Since last Thursday, thousands of New Yorkers have been in the streets protesting the death of George Floyd, systemic racism, and making a larger call for justice for communities of color. Over the last 5 days, hundreds of arrests have been made in protests that have ranged from peaceful gatherings to violent confrontations between police and protesters. Public advocate Jumaane Williams joins me now to talk about what he's seen at the protests that he's been to at the last few days, including last night at Barclays Center, and why it's so important for these calls of justice to be heard and where we go from here. Jumaane, welcome to All of It.
Peace and blessings. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, we do want to hear from you. Have you participated in any of the protests? What have you seen? What isn't being reported? Do you want to get involved, but you're really not sure how? Give us a call at 646-435-7280. Our phone number is 646-435-7280. Or you can tweet to us at All of It WNYC. Or you can leave us a message on Instagram if you want to be anonymous. That's at All of It WNYC. So, Jumaane, you were at Barclays last night. What did you see during the protests there?
Last night when we decided to do our press conference at 11:01, when the curfew started, a lot of protesters had moved. But while we were there, a group of protesters did come. They were in the street, but we were able to help facilitate their movement. Because at first, there were some police cars that were preventing them from move. And firmly believing that had we not been so oppressive in the protesters' movement from the beginning of this, we may have had a different result.
You know, a lot of people have been saying out loud that something has changed over the last few days. What do you think has changed? Do you feel that way?
You know, it's just interesting to watch the failures of leadership on every rung of government, city, state, and federal, and it's interesting to see the mayor and the governor completely fail on this, similar to how they failed during the pandemic. And there's people who are crying out in pain for a host of issues, and so we can get into that. But, you know, acutely, right now, George Floyd was killed, and people saying too much over policing. Everything we ask for, we get sent police, and there's no accountability. And instead of our leaders saying, we hear you, here's what we're going to do to address it, the answer again was additional police and more restrictive laws. Why we would think that that is the best way to respond is beyond me, and it speaks to the tone deafness and the echo chamber which our leaders are working on, and frankly puts everybody in danger. It puts protesters and police officers needlessly in danger. And I saw instances where we were able to de-escalate situations just by releasing some of the tension. And I was there for a few days. So Saturday was one of the worst nights, admittedly. But Sunday actually got a little better. Yes, there was some looting, but there were no fires burning. We didn't see as bad as we saw it when the curfew was instituted. And I believe that was, again, just an act that would agitate people who are already angry, hurt, who have been cooped up in their houses for months.
Let's take a call. Priya is calling us on line one from Millburn, New Jersey. Priya, thanks for calling All of It. What's going on?
Well, thanks for taking my call, Allison. As I was telling your screener, a friend and I planned a demonstration this past Sunday. We just texted a handful of friends. We wanted it to be small because we just couldn't sit down and not speak up any longer. And, you know, through the power of social media, about 150 people showed up. And what was striking to me was, okay, so there was plenty of police presence and they were being respectful. And the only sort of altercation we had was when a young white woman decided she was going to stand in the middle of the street and encourage other folks to stand in the middle of the street and basically antagonize the cops that were there. And, you know, the cops told her, you need to get out of the street. You can't stand in the street. And she did, and the others did as well. But I really just want to draw or shine a light on this because I feel like I can appreciate, you know, non-black and brown people's indignation, anger, all of it, sadness, grief, etc., and throwing their weight into this. But to some degree, you also kind of have to get out of the way and not, like, at the end of, you know, that woman was not going to be arrested or she was not going to be thrown to the street or thrown on the ground and have somebody put a knee in her neck. And I mean, and maybe she would, I don't know. But the point is that folks just need to understand what the stakes are and not just take this lightly and as an opportunity to kind of go and rabble rouse. And, you know, there was also another woman there, also a white woman, but older, and she was just talking the ear off of a black woman, a black mother with her daughter who were there in protest. This young black girl was holding up a sign saying, "Am I next?" And this older white woman was just talking her ear off mm-hmm. about how many protests she's been in and how much she's done in the past on behalf of black and brown people. And I'm just kind of tired of the virtue signaling.
Yeah.
I'm just tired of it. And I and my friend, we're focused on small protests. We are focused on just getting out there, showing up. And it's not my job to empower other people to be or feel empowered. I'm just showing up. I'm getting out there. And I think that if each of us could just do that and not worry about T-shirts and, you know, mass gatherings and megaphones, we just need to each show up.
Priya, thank you so much for calling in. So, Jemani, that's very she brought up so many interesting points. I want to pull out the idea of allyship and what positive allyship is. Could you provide some guidance for people? Like, what is a good way to be an ally at these protests?
No, thank you so much for that. And I appreciate that caller. And first, at the top, just thank you so much, as you mentioned, all of the allies like that caller, and the white allies who are coming out. We've been saying for so long that some of this stuff will not change until the people who feel the privilege are they themselves out there. So it's so powerful to see white allies, to go through Chinatown and see people supporting and everybody screaming out Black Lives Matter. That's what we have to do. To the other point, and I always want to make clear, I'm a very big supporter of Kingian nonviolence. And that's how I protest and that's what I encourage. I don't want to confuse that with necessarily peaceful protests because people say no justice, no peace. And so to the extent that there is going to be some disruption to the status quo, there might be some traffic blocking and making people uncomfortable so people will hear you is understandable. What I would ask and has continued to ask is what this caller said exactly. And my colleague, Brad Lander, has been excellent about speaking about this and saying, first of all, and I agree, it's so heartfelt to see white allies in pain seeing their fellow New Yorker, their fellow human being, brother, sister, in pain and wanting to help them. It may be confusing trying to figure out what to do. And so what I say in those moments, as you're trying to figure out what to do and you're in a protest, follow the people who are most in pain, especially black women. Black women have been a moral conscience to this country for such a long time. And at that moment, you will probably be doing well if you look to see what black women are doing and just follow them. There were countless episodes that I witnessed personally and on social media where it was black women stepping in, trying to stop some of the things that were going on. And be clear, there are people who have either different or concurrent agendas, which I don't know if what they are, and they're protesting in a different way, not the way that I encourage. But that's not the people that you should follow. So you follow the people who are most in pain and who are trying best to cause some status quo disruption as constructively to get their voices heard. And I think that's the best thing that can be done. And Mm-hmm. If we all did what we could where we are with what we have, what an amazing journey it would be.
My guest is Jumaane Williams, New York City public advocate. We do want to hear from you, our listeners, Team All of It. Have you participated in any protests? What have you seen? What isn't being reported? Why did you want to get involved? Perhaps you want to get involved and you're just not sure how to. Give us a call at 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280, or you can tweet to us or send us a DM via Instagram at All of It WNYC. I do want to go to... It is Jean Marie who is calling us from Chelsea. Hi, Jean Marie. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, Allison. Thank you for having the show. I think you are just delightful.
Thank you.
So I'm calling because I did go out to the day protests Saturday and Sunday, and which was just pure exuberance and solidarity. And then Sunday night, I couldn't resist going out, and so I was riding around on my bike, figuring out, where are people? And I overheard somebody mention Soho on the street. So I rode down, but I noticed, these giant phalanxes of police and banks of police cars in places where there's no one. So we're paying all these police just to be hanging out. And then in Soho, I was alone, riding around and watching, little trash can fires being set and watching, filming as people, broke into Gucci and Chanel and Patek Philippe. And the weird pattern that I observed was the police would be like, they were all in these places of inaction, and then they would come and they would drive down the end of the block and everybody would start to run, and I was filming. So I have a lot of footage of all these people running and being careful not to hurt me, because I have to say that everybody I didn't feel unsafe at any point, while I was filming, except when an SUV almost ran me over. But I'm athletic, so I got out of the way just in time. But it was interesting, because the police would look, but they wouldn't come until the damage was done, and then they would come in all angry. And I was trying to film these policemen, because they've caught these kids inside of Gucci at the end. And I went in, I'm a middle-aged white woman. That's why I went down there, because I thought, somebody has to be there, witnessing and filming, and I would be less likely to be hit by the police, although they did menace me a few times. But, but I was, saying to them, stop, don't hurt those children. Don't hurt those kids. It's just stuff. And, It was really a huge disappointment, because here we have this sea of cortisol and adrenaline, but all the demonstrators wearing their masks, not hurting this white woman in their midst, with a camera, an expensive camera, and not bothering me, being very polite, picking helping me up when I had to dive in the SUV, and then the police. They're just creating this menace that's increasing the cortisol, increasing the adrenaline.
Jean Marie, let me get in here, because I want to thank you first of all for calling, and I do want to get Jumaane in here to talk about the police presence a little bit. Jumaane, I've lived in New York for 32 years and been doing this for a long time, and I have been commenting to friends in journalism. I've not seen it as militarized as this. Maybe since Tompkins Square, maybe a little bit around the RNC, but there's just a real militarization of the New York City police force in a way that, this is just anecdotal, I have never seen as a journalist. What is your take on that?
It's very unfortunate, and it's a failure of leadership again. When the death of Eric Garner happened, although the mayor got flack for this, he was absolutely right in allowing, I remember, protesters just basically were on West Side Highway and they couldn't move. And America got flack for not moving in and trying to arrest folks and moving folks out. But in other places across the city, people did more than that, because they tried to restrict that. Mm-hmm. And to see now we're in the same situation, and why we started policing it so differently from the beginning, I don't understand. And when I got to Barclays, I guess that was Friday or so, the amount of police that were there were amazing, just surrounding the protests. Now, deal with people who are angry, agitated, in pain about policing. And that's the response. It makes no sense, and we were mistaken from the beginning. Then we did it for a second day. Instead of trying to figure out a way to facilitate folks to express what they're saying and provide a plan by which we can address it, they just tried to pen people in, try to prevent people from moving. I spent 2 hours in Auburn and church just asking the police to allow the protesters to go forward. Why are you blocking them from the street and getting people more agitated? Mm-hmm. Just let it go. And finally, they were able to do that. But the anger was there. They spent 2 hours. You saw, if you're a police officer, you're getting screamed at for 3 hours and people cursing and doing all kinds of things and water thrown. The adrenaline is on. And then if you're a protester, all you wanted to do is express yourself. But for 2 hours, you're being pushed behind a gate. You can't move. There's nothing but tension that's going to happen. Now, contrast that with something that happened the next day on Sunday, as we all marched from Barclays on the street. We got to Manhattan Bridge, and the police formed the line. And thankfully, I was able to finally say, why are you stopping these people from moving? There are 1,000 more people coming. It's going to be bad. Then they were released, and they went on the bridge. And some people started throwing water and bottles at the police. What happened? The protesters themselves got in and stopped it from happening. Mm-hmm. Now, if they had not allowed them to walk, and you have people who just want to walk, and people start throwing bottles, but they were not allowed to express themselves, would that have happened, or would that have turned into something worse? And I was there in Soho, and we walked over, see people walking. Again, another line of police started. And I asked people what happened. They just say they stopped us. I finally got to the front, and to no surprise, there was a young black woman who was doing her best to ease the tension. And she had approaches to take a knee. And I said to the police officer, let's just all take a knee. Let's take a knee right now and help defuse the situation. They refused. Now, I can't say if that action would have prevented what happened at Gucci after that. But I can say if we're not using all the tools to de-escalate, instead we're sending more police and sending curfews without even addressing the pain that's going on. That's the worst way to do it. And if you are someone there, like some people are calling and others, who are very angry and just want to express, you are more apt to help prevent that kind of stuff that's going on if you had been allowed to express yourself. But if you have bent up anger yourself, I don't know. And so the question is, why did we start this the wrong way, both from the mayor, the governor, and obviously our president, who is using rubber bullets and tear gas to take a photo op? That's not the direction we should be going. We should be going another direction.
Jumaane, I want to get to William because he is 70 years old and he has pulled over on the side and he has a question. William, thank you so much for taking the time to call. What can we help you with?
So I'm a child of the movement. My parents were in the movement, and when I was young, they would send money to SCLC to bail out Dr. King and folks like that. I can't do the rubber bullets and the gas at this point, and I can't run fast enough from the police. So who do I send my money to bail out these young folks who are on the front line?
Jumaane? Do you have any suggestions about for people who want to make a contribution? They can't do it necessarily physically, but they want to make a monetary contribution. I mean, you don't have to name organizations, but just where the money, they might want to go to the Google machine and type in what.
So I would say this as my position. I can't tell people where they should donate. I can tell you the people that I am comfortable working with. And when they say something is happening, I try to support them in my capacity. People like the Brooklyn Community Bail Fund, Free Them All from Public Health, Legal Aid Society, Defenders for Services. Organizations that deal with Black Lives Matter, the 400 Foundation, the Justice League, No New Jails NYC, CPR, Till Freedom is another one we work with, New York Communities for Change, Housing Justice for All, NYIC. These are all communities that I know. They, like me, are supportive of nonviolent protests, but also want to push the system into discomfort. And when they are putting something together, I know it will be constructive to get the message across.
My guest, Jumaane Williams, New York City public advocate. I do want to ask you about the curfew before. I know your time is limited. Obviously, we've just heard that it's going to be 8 p.m. It's going to continue through the week. I know you are not for the way the curfews are being used now, but you've acknowledged that they can be a tool. Why is the way they're being used now not valid? And how could they be used so that people who want to protest peacefully will have that opportunity versus people who just want to create chaos?
You know, it seems when we use these kind of tools more often, it's because black individuals are saying they're in pain and they want change. And the response to that is generally not, here's what we can do, it's more oppressive politics. So the last time we had a curfew, 1943, is because a white officer shot a soldier, a black soldier. And so there were disruptions in Harlem, and they put in a curfew. That was the last time. Lo and behold, the next time, we're doing it again. Now, I was the first agency to shut down during the pandemic and to actually call for an entire citywide shutdown. So we have to shut down this city, because those curfews and that type have places to keep people protected. And at that point, there were tens of thousands of people who had died across the globe. The governor and the mayor refused. The governor put the weak pause order when we needed a full stop. And now we're saying that we want to see black people stop dying at the hands of the police. And by the way, it's not just that, right? It's the response of who's dying during the coronavirus pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
It's the black maternal mortality rates are through the roof because people don't believe their pain. It's because people have been living in Niger, not getting the services that they need. And so all of these things are coming together, and people are saying, we're tired. And instead of addressing it, you put a curfew that causes more agitation. You send double the amount of police officers to cause more agitation. And you do that all without a plan, saying this is how we're going to address your concerns. If someone could sit there and tell me how that is a constructive thing to do, I'd be really surprised. It seems like a very knee-jerk reaction that again fits the mold of we're not responding to the pain in certain communities, and it further exacerbated a very terrible response from the beginning. We say that we're a progressive city in this country. We should have led this country on how to deal with this issue. We did the opposite.
My guest has been Jumaane Williams, New York City public advocate. Jumaane, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And I do want to take one more call before we've got a lot of people. We've got Arthur from Queens, says people are coming out because there's no leader. We've got Rob from Manhattan, who is on the phone saying remake, not reform policy, take guns away, train intervention. There's someone who's confused by callers who don't want big protests. We've got a lot of great calls online. I'm going to finish up with Christina, who has been calling in, holding from the Bronx. Christina, thank you so much for calling into all of it.
Thank you. I went to one of the protests on Saturday in Harlem, and I would like to participate in more. I think it makes a strong statement. Everybody that I saw outside on Saturday afternoon was peaceful. I think everyone was wearing masks, although we weren't able to actually stand 6 feet apart. But there was also a march from 125th Street, at least all the way down to 42nd. I wimped out at 42nd Street, but we covered a lot of territory. It makes a big statement. I would like to, and I have now a very, my concern is about balancing the need to slow the spread and prevent, you know, another yes. surge in the pandemic in New York City with the urgency and the benefit of going out and protesting while people are paying attention to this and while people are motivated to really work for systemic change. And is it even safe to get on public, how safe is it really to get on public transportation at this point with everything that the mayor and the governor have been saying about sanitizing suburbs and the buses every night? Is that it happening effectively?
Christina, thank you so much for calling in. And thanks to everybody who called in for our segment on RU Protest.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.